This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The abortion rights question has reemerged in full force as a dividing line between conservative and liberal lawmakers. This week, of course, Alabama signed into law an effective ban on abortion. Other states, including Missouri, Ohio, and Louisiana, are moving in a similar direction. The aggressive attempt to tear down Roe versus Wade has left many Democrats scrambling. And the Senate Intelligence Committee subpoena of Donald Trump Jr. has turned some Republican senators against Richard Burr. It also highlights a divide between North Carolina's two Republican senators, Richard Burr and Tom Tillis. Plus, the sponsor of North Carolina's bathroom bill won the GOP primary in the 9th Congressional District. And here to talk about that and more is the political junkie Ken Rudin. Hello, Ken.
And we only have 2 hours to discuss all this.
Well, let's talk about abortion restrictions. It's interesting to me. I mean, there's a whole legal question. We're not going to talk about that. I really want to talk about the politics of this with regard to 2020, because it would seem in some ways like a gift to Democrats who have mobilized the women's vote. We saw what happened in 2018. That mobilization caused some big changes. You would think this would play into their hands. But maybe not. The Republicans have been very successful at reframing the debate over abortion. Where are we politically in this debate?
That's exactly right. The fact that the Republicans are now on the ascendancy and are being aggressive on abortion, whereas often it was the Democrats who seemed to have the upper hand. Remember when Al Gore was running in 2000, the slogan was, "It's the Supreme Court, stupid," basically thinking that, you know, pro-choice Democrats would come out in strong force to defend abortion rights. But with the president, remember, Donald Trump used to be very pro-choice until he wasn't, but he's now quite opposed to abortion rights, and now he's talking about the Democrats being the party of death, the party of infanticide. So we find more and more Republicans on the being more and more aggressive, as we see in Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi and Ohio and Missouri and elsewhere, and the Democrats seem to be put back on their heels. Because they didn't expect, I don't know why they didn't expect this, but they didn't expect this kind of onslaught.
Well, part of it, Ken, is the way Republicans are now reframing the debate. Roe versus Wade is a very specific kind of decision about a particular abortion in a very early stage of pregnancy. But Republicans are now asking Democrats if they support a woman's right to have an abortion up to the moment of birth. This is not in question, and yet it's become a question, and somehow Democrats are reeling because they find themselves having to answer a question that's not on the table.
Well, I think there was, I can't remember who it was. There was one Democrat, I think, who gave an answer to just a basic question about whether they would support how late somebody could have an abortion. And it was kind of a throwaway answer. And Republicans jumped on it. They're talking about now they're ripping babies out of women's wombs and killing them. So, I mean, the rhetoric is getting so far extreme, and yet we've seen from the president and from Republicans around the country and Republican candidates. I mean, when Dan Bishop won that special primary earlier this week in North Carolina, he said he cast a key vote against infanticide. So Republicans everywhere are using this tactic. I mean, not in more swing states, you know, more like leading blue states, but in these conservative states. Republicans are really taking the offensive on this issue.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in a purple state like North Carolina, and also whether or not this could backfire in the sense that one of the questions coming out of the 2018 midterms is, could the Democrats sustain the momentum for two more years and bring them into the 2020 election? And this is just the kind of thing that might do it, aside from the rhetoric. So, I mean, it's a very interesting political question going forward.
Absolutely. And I'm not convinced. I mean, again, the one thing, look, if you look at polls, I think there was an NBC Wall Street Journal poll that had 71% of the American people supporting the retention of the Roe decision. And yet you'd never know that by the rhetoric we're hearing on the campaign trail, and which a lot of voters are listening to, saying, wait a second, I don't want, you know, abortions in the 9th or 10th month. I mean, of course, that's ridiculous, but that's how crazy the rhetoric has gotten.
All right. 2020 presidential hopeful Elizabeth Warren announced today a plan to take this on and, in fact, to try to get federal legislation that would defend abortion rights. Talk more about that.
Well, lots of luck with that. I mean, because basically she wants the Congress to basically protect all the things that were in the Roe versus Wade 1973 court decision. She wants this to be part of federal law. But if you look at this, I mean, the Senate is 53-47 Republican. They are not about to write Roe into law. especially when you have a president who's been campaigning against it, and when you have Republican candidates running ads all over the country saying, you know, that this has got to stop. Look, what happened in Alabama, nobody thinks that the law, the drastic law in Alabama that basically outlaws all abortion, including for rape and incest, which is pretty remarkable, and would put send doctors to prison for 99 years. Nobody expects that to be put into to law. What they're doing is they're trying to force it to the Supreme Court, which has, of course, two Trump additions. It's a very conservative court, more conservative than ever, and they think ultimately, and they may not be wrong, that ultimately, when it comes down to it, the argument about Roe will be before the Supreme Court, even more than just the Alabama law or the Georgia law. And an overturning of Roe is definite, and it's not like a contradiction of terms here, but it's a definite possibility.
Well, the Alabama law doesn't see the light of day. It gets struck down in federal courts, and the Supreme Court won't even take it. But the fact is they'll seem moderate when they do approve decisions that will chip away at abortion rights and make it seem like the Supreme Court is moderate compared to Alabama. So that's
all along they have been chipping away. They all have been these small little state laws that basically chip away at Roe. Alabama is not even chipping away. It's a gigantic hammer smashing on the head of Roe and seeing how far it gets them.
Hey, let's talk about the subpoena and Senator Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, who is pressing ahead with the subpoena of Donald Trump Jr., much to the dismay of his fellow Republicans.
Well, this is fascinating because Richard Burr, who is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, has been winning plaudits for 2 years about how even-handed he's been. He has not been running to the newspapers and the TV cameras for headlines. He's been doing his job, doing it quite fairly, and getting high marks from both sides. But when Donald Trump Jr. twice was asked to testify and then twice backed out with no reason, Richard Burr, and his co-chairman, the Democrat Mark Warner of Virginia, felt that the only thing they could do was subpoena. Now, when you subpoena Donald Trump Jr., you take on the president. And so Richard Burr suddenly, the longtime conservative Richard Burr, has suddenly become a turncoat in the eyes of many Republicans. And a lot of Republicans are running against him, talking about Mitch McConnell said, it's case closed. I don't know what Burr is doing. I mean, he didn't say those exact words. But the Republicans feel that Burr is stepping out against the president, and that's a heresy.
Of course, Richard Burr has suggested he's not running for re-election. His colleague and fellow Republican Tom Tillis is. He's up in 2020 and has been having to move farther to the right. And I think this really shines on a light on the difference between the two of them and also the Tillis dilemma.
Well, I don't know about the difference between the two of them. It is about the Tillis dilemma, because remember not too long ago when Tillis said, I have questions about Donald Trump's national emergency to go around Congress and get funds for the wall. He got lambasted by so many Republicans. He even now has a conservative primary challenger for next year. And so there's tremendous pressure on Tillis to stand up and say, look, what Burr is doing is wrong. And if you really want to avoid the wrath of Trump, you're going to stand up and defend, you're going to stand up and attack Burr. And that's basically what he's done. He said, look, you know, this is done. It's over already. It's over. It's done and come and gone. It's all over already, and Burr doesn't need to do that. He hasn't specifically attacked Burr, but there's pressure on him and said, if you don't stand up to what Burr is doing, Trump and the conservatives will launch an attack on you next year. Tillis is in a tough position.
No, and it's not about even being conservative or to the right, which many primary challenges in the past couple of cycles have been about for Republicans. This is about who is closer to Trump and who is more supportive. The Tillis campaign has come out against their challenger, saying that Tillis is more pro-Trump, and in fact, their challenger is the guy who's anti-Trump.
About this challenger is a guy named Garland Tucker. He first supported Scott in 2016. He supported Scott Walker, but that didn't go anywhere. He supported Marco Rubio. Then he supported Ted Cruz, and he supported John Kasich. I mean, he was going, and finally, he backed Donald Trump. Now, Tillis is saying, wait a second, I'm voting 95% with the president. This guy has backed anybody but Trump in 2016. How could he run as the pro Trump candidate? But Hannity and the other conservatives they're ignoring that. Basically, what they're saying is, look, if Tillis is wavering on backing the president, 100% of the way, we'll find an opponent to run against you.
And there may be more than one opponent running against Tillis.
That's exactly right.
So we'll see. There's a Mark Walker's name has been tossed in the mix, and while he pulled himself out after the flip-flop over the executive authority and the executive order around the wall, he may be back in the race. Hey, let's talk about the 9th District. You mentioned it earlier. Dan Bishop came out on top and didn't even need a runoff. So 47% of the vote. Also the supporter and co-sponsor of the bathroom bill. Tell us about what that race is going to
be. This is a key race, and this will be one of the, I mean, the general election is in September. This is the famous 9th Congressional District of North Carolina, the one that Mark Harris ostensibly won last year by 905 votes, and then they realized, wait a second, there have been illegal absentee ballots. That was a McRae-Dowless case. So they threw out that election, and Dan McCready, the Democrat who almost won this, the Republicans have been winning this seat since 1962, since John F. Kennedy was president. It's a Republican seat, but it was very close. Democrats are very optimistic of it, but the fact that Mark Harris is not running again, the fact that Dan Bishop got the Republican nomination without a runoff is good news for the Republicans, but the Democrats feel, look, this guy is a flawed candidate. The bathroom bill is not popular. His so-called extreme views on abortion could prove, you know, hurting him in September. We'll see, but all eyes will be on this special election.
You mentioned McRae-Dowless, who is at the center of this election fraud scandal. He not only that, he was voted first, which I think he makes him the poster child for vote early, vote often. He's the guy. He's the guy.
And at least he didn't vote by absentee ballot.
Well, we don't know. He may have done that too. We don't know yet. The results aren't in. Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead, we'll talk about a fictional world where women can control their own fertility. Imagine that. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.